This is a reading of chapters 3 and 4 of the book, A Search for Common Ground, subtitle, Let's Talk. My name is Fred Wilgenberg and I am the author. Chapter 3, Evolved? I grew up attending a private school that taught that God was the originator of all things as they are described in Genesis 1 and 2 of the Bible. Some in the church think that any theory other than what is literally explained in Genesis 1 and 2 cannot be of God. Evolution is a theory that is not described in the Bible. The modern theory of evolution is described in the following way, in quotes, life on earth evolved gradually, beginning with one primitive species, perhaps a self-replicating molecule that lived more than 3.5 billion years ago. It then branched out over time, throwing off many new and diverse species, end of quotes. For most of my life, I have disregarded the theory of evolution. I did not learn about evolution in the schools I attended, and I did not read books on evolution. In fact, I stayed away from such books as they were perceived to be dangerous and against God. I was skeptical of people who claimed to be Christians, yet they also believed that much of life evolved. Besides, thinking of things within a context of millions and billions of years was incomprehensible. It seemed so huge and impersonal. At the same time, I was troubled by the discoveries of ancient fossils, including those of dinosaurs. A friend encouraged me to read the book Why Evolution is True by Jerry Coyne, an ecologist at the University of Chicago. Coyne calls, in quotes, evolution a theory just like the theory of gravity, but it's a theory that is also a fact, end of quotes. Evidence is found mostly in the fossil record. A fossil is defined as, in quotes, a remnant, impression, or trace of an organism of past geologic ages that has been preserved in the Earth's crust, or that you can see in some rocks, end of quote. Scientists have discovered ancient fossils of all ages, with the oldest showing early life to be quite simple, and the youngest fossils having more similarities to living species. Within fossils, scientists have discovered evolutionary change where one species of animal or plant has changed into another over time. Coyne highlights a number of other points in seeking to make his case for the theory of evolution. There is much evidence of natural selection acting in the wild. Species show genetic variation for many traits, which is evidence of evolution. There are many, in quotes here, facts and data that are not necessarily predicted by the theory of evolution, but make sense only in light of the theory of evolution, end of quotes. If one considers the theory of evolution to be true, how did it all begin? Many evolutionists contend that there was a Big Bang to ultimately get the world started. Here is part of a description from well-respected physicist Stephen Hawking in his lecture, The Beginning of Time. It begins here. All the evidence seems to indicate that the universe has not existed forever, but that it had a beginning about 15 billion years ago. However, many people were unhappy with the idea that the universe had a beginning, because it seemed to imply the existence of a supernatural being who created the universe. They preferred to believe that the universe and the human race had existed forever. The theory that the universe has existed forever is in serious difficulty with the second law of thermodynamics, which states that disorder always increases with time. Like the argument about human progress, it indicates that there must have been a beginning. Otherwise, the universe would be in a state of complete disorder by now, and everything would be at the same temperature. The situation was different, however, when it was realized that the universe is not static, but expanding. Galaxies are moving steadily apart from each other. This means that they were closer together in the past, down to zero separation. The universe and time itself had a beginning about 15 billion years ago. At this time, the Big Bang, all the matter in the universe would have been on top of itself. The density would have been infinite. End of quotes, as part of the lecture, The Beginning of Time, by Stephen Hawking. It is interesting that Stephen Hawking acknowledges that there was physical material, or matter, of the universe, even at the beginning of the Big Bang. If the Big Bang was real, what originally created the physical matter or material that expanded? Did God create it? To further boggle our minds about the universe within which we reside, I encourage you to view www.scaleofuniverse. Again, www.scaleofuniverse.com. Then, to be rescued from a feeling of insignificance following a visit to that website, I ponder a simple quote that hangs in my kitchen window. It quotes, "Peace is seeing a beautiful sunrise and knowing who to thank." End of quote. The theories of evolution and the Big Bang are difficult for many of us to fathom. It is even more difficult when the evolution theory explains how humans originated. As evolutionist Jerry Coyne points out, many of us, in quotes, can't bring ourselves to acknowledge that, just like every other species, we too evolved from an ancestor that was very different. We've always perceived ourselves as somehow standing apart from the rest of nature, end of quote. That is not so challenging for people who believe that God is not real, including Coyne, who is a proponent of atheism. It can be very challenging if we believe in God, including that every human is specially made in the image of God. How can humans be unique in having God's image if, like other species, they evolve from a different, non-human ancestor? Coyne writes, in quotes, "Molecular data derived from DNA and protein sequences confirms these relationships and also tells us roughly when we diverged from our relatives. We are most closely related to the chimpanzees, equally to the common chimp and the bonobo. And we diverged from our joint common ancestor about 7 million years ago," end of quotes. Francis Collins is a geneticist and a physician who led the Human Genome Project. The Human Genome Project was the international collaborative research program whose goal was to complete mapping and understanding of all the genes of humans. All of our genes together are known as our genome. Collins explains, beginning of quotes, "The genome could be thought of in terms of a book with multiple uses. It is a history book, a narrative of the journey of our species through time. It is a shop manual with an incredibly detailed blueprint for building every human cell. It is a transformative textbook of medicine with insights that will give healthcare providers immense new powers to treat, prevent, and cure disease," end of quote. In his book, The Language of God, Francis Collins explains how he went from being an atheist to being a believer in God and in Jesus. He came to that place through reading C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, a book that is discussed more in chapter 6 of this book. Collins describes himself as a theistic evolutionist. This is one who believes in God, but also believes that the origin of life is evolution, including for humans. Charles Darwin is described by many as the father of the theory of evolution. Francis Collins describes how Darwin was, in quotes, "immensely insecure about his theory. He could hardly have imagined a more compelling demonstration of his theory than what we find by studying the DNA of multiple organisms." By the way, DNA is the carrier of genetic information within each cell. Continuing the quotes by by Francis Collins. In the mid-19th century, Darwin had no way of knowing what the mechanism of evolution by natural selection might be. We can now see that the variation he postulated is supported by naturally occurring mutations in DNA. The mutations that fall in the more vulnerable parts of the genome are generally harmful and are thus rapidly culled out of the population because they reduce reproductive fitness. But on rare occasions, a mutation will arise by chance that offers a slight degree of selective advantage. That new DNA spelling will have a slightly higher likelihood of being passed on to future offspring. Over the course of a very long period of time, such favorable rare events can become widespread in all members of the species, ultimately resulting in major changes in biological function. End of quote. Francis Collins writes, again beginning quotes, "I found it difficult to imagine that there could be a real conflict between scientific truth and spiritual truth. Truth is truth. Truth cannot disprove truth. I joined the American Scientific Affiliation, found at www.asa3, again, www.asa3.org, a group of several thousand scientists who are serious believers in God and who offer many thoughtful proposals of a pathway toward harmony between science and faith." Collins asks, in beginning quote, "Will we turn our backs on science because it is perceived as a threat to God, abandoning all of the promise of advancing our understanding of nature and applying that to the alleviation of suffering and the betterment of humanity? Alternatively, will we turn our backs on faith, concluding that sciences have rendered the spiritual life no longer necessary? Both of these choices are profoundly dangerous. Both deny truth. Both will diminish the nobility of humankind. Both will be devastating to our future. And both are unnecessary." End of quote. At this point, some readers, especially those who have no qualms with the theory of evolution, including of humans, may be wondering about the necessity of this discussion. If that includes you, I ask you to bear with us readers who have a biblical or a Bible perspective, at least for the next chapter. You may be able to gain more insight on that perspective. Some of you Christian readers may be wondering if proof text from the Bible will be emphasized to counter some of the information already presented. Please read on to find out. What do we have in common? We are all uncertain about the exact nature of origins, and we all have the ability to learn and discover. In closing this chapter, here are just a few thought or discussion questions. Number one, what is your understanding of how the world and life originated? Explain why your understanding may be reasonable and adequate. Number two, it is clear that humans are uniquely special compared to other living things. If explanations in this chapter about humans are different from your understanding, what is your response to those explanations? Number three, closed-mindedness and narrow-mindedness are traits that most of us experience at times. What effects do they have on societies? And number four, if you are closed-minded or narrow-minded about science or spirituality, what effects might that have on your personal life and your relationships? Chapter 4, Anchored and Unsure. The evolution theory supported by Charles Darwin, as well as by scientists Jerry Coyne and Francis Collins, is macroevolution. Macroevolution refers to major evolutionary changes over time in which the origins of a new species evolve from previously existing different species. Examples of this would be fish descending from an invertebrate animal or whales descending from a land mammal. In comparison, microevolution refers to varieties within a given type. Change happens within a group or species, but the descendant is clearly of the same type as the ancestor. This might better be called variation or adaptation. Such changes might be accomplished by natural selection, in which a trait within the present variety is selected as the best for a given set of conditions. It can also occur through artificial selection, such as when dog breeders produce a new breed of dog. Most people agree that microevolution occurs. The dividing point for many, especially people who believe in God, is macroevolution. It is often thought that a person cannot be agreeable with the Big Bang and evolution theories, and at the same time that God is the creator of the world. Those ideas are considered opposing of each other. To many, it is unfathomable to view the world as billions of years old and mammals as millions of years old, compared to the view that the world is about 10,000 years old. They believe God created the world in 6 24-hour days because that is the way it seems that the man of God, Moses, wrote it in the Bible. Personally, I believe what Genesis 1 states, that, in quotes, God created the heavens and the earth, end of quotes. I think God actively designed every part of the physical world. But I am uncertain about how exactly God did this. With much evidence discovered within fossil records and genetics, it seems increasingly unlikely that Moses intended to write an exact scientific account when he wrote Genesis 1 and 2 around 1500 BC. Is it possible that the Big Bang and evolution theories can be in harmony with God as creator rather than in opposition? Perhaps, but what about us humans? The Bible describes that we are uniquely made in the image of God, as is discussed later. How could we humans possibly have evolved from a common ancestor like chimpanzees, as described by evolutionists, if we uniquely have the image of God? Many believers in God draw the line there that humans, otherwise known as Homo sapiens, are the one species that did not evolve from something else. Evolutionist Jerry Coyne challenges this. He writes, in quotes, "While more liberal creationists admit that some species could have evolved from others, all creationists draw the line at humans. The gap between us and other primates, they say, was unbridgeable by evolution and must therefore have involved an act of special creation," end of quotes. Coyne's suggestion that all believers in God deny the evolution of humans is not correct, but it certainly is a challenging thought. Could humans be uniquely made in God's image and at the same time be a part of evolution designed by God? Many believers in God are troubled by the suggestion that humans may have evolved from other species for at least two reasons. Number one, it is seen as a denial of the existence of Adam and Eve, who are the first specific people described in the Bible. Therefore, a denial of their fall into sin. And then number two, if Adam and Eve and the fall into sin are denied, then the need for Jesus as the Savior from sin may be questioned. Old Testament scholar John Walton of Wheaton College explains that the Hebrew word Adam in Genesis 1 verse 26 to 27 means humanity in general. In that passage, humans are described as made in God's image and called to be stewards over the rest of creation. As well, those humans described in that passage may have been people who existed before the historical people, Adam and Eve. The Bible states in Genesis 2 verse 7 that the Lord God formed the man, Adam, from the dust of the ground. From Genesis 2 verse 7 through 3 verse 24, the use of the definite article, the word the, with Adam occurs several times. Walton describes this use of Adam as an archetypal individual, a typical example or representative of humanity. Again, an archetypal individual, in other words, a typical example or representative of humanity. Humanity was given the task of serving and keeping the Garden of Eden. According to Walton, the description of Adam being formed from the dust of the ground is a means of identity rather than as a physical description of material from which he was made, coming from Genesis 2, verse 7. He goes on to describe humanity in quotes, "We are mortal, we are frail, we are earthy, we are dust," end of quotes. The above descriptions that the humans described in Genesis 1, verse 26 and 27 may have been people who existed before the historical Adam and Eve, and that dust is a means of identity rather than physical description. And that allows for the possibility that humans may have evolved like the rest of living species. Walton further describes that mortal humanity had a remedy that kept them from dying. It was the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. However, in regard to the reality of their fall into sin in Genesis 3, we read that the humans chose to sin. The ultimate consequence of their sin was death because, according to Genesis 3, verse 24, they were banished from the garden and therefore from eating of the tree of life. Since that time, the rest of us humans have also been subject to sin as well as death. Walton explains that Adam and Eve were real historical people, but in the original Hebrew language, at least for Adam, his personal name was not used until Genesis 4 to 5, chapters 4 and 5. Scholar John Walton summarizes his teaching, quote, "The view I offer says the Bible doesn't make claims that are necessarily at odds with science. I don't see a chasm between the Bible and science that either keeps people from coming to faith or leads people away from faith. That doesn't mean we have everything resolved. But concerning biological human origins, we've sometimes made the Bible say things that it was never saying." End of quotes. Pastor, apologist, and author Timothy Keller acknowledges, beginning quotes, "The fact is that real Orthodox believers with a high view of Scripture are all over the map on this. I can line up 10 really smart people in all those different buckets, which I'll call theistic evolution, young earth, or 24-hour days creation, and let's call it progressive creationism or semi-theistic evolution. There are all these different views. And when you see a lot of smart people disagreeing on this stuff, well," end of quotes. This discussion on the origin of the world and of life has perhaps caused you uneasiness and confusion, especially if you are a believer in God. Discussing evolution may feel dishonoring of God because many evolutionists come from an atheistic perspective. Is it necessary that all believers in God have an understanding of evolution? It may not be necessary that all older generation Christians understand evolution. But if they want to be relevant to their younger loved ones, they may need to incorporate a curiosity for learning with being faithful to God's word. If we are actively engaged with younger generations, or if we have peers who think differently than we do, then it is important that we are knowledgeable of evolution. It is critical that we can communicate effectively and respectfully with people who have different understandings. Younger generations are learning various theories of the origin of the world and of life. If we are perceived as closed-minded, we may find ourselves to be islands that are secluded from them and are therefore not relevant to them. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a former basketball star and cultural critic, wrote an article for Time magazine titled American Students and Politicians Need to Stop Waging War on Reason. He writes about a war on reason. Quotes, embracing reason is an uphill battle for humans. Almost 400 years ago, philosopher Francis Bacon wrote, beginning quotes, the human understanding, when it has once adopted an opinion, draws all things else to support and agree with it. And though there be a greater number and weight of instances to be found on the other side, yet these it neglects and despises. In present day, we seem hardwired to discard information that contradicts our beliefs. We have the internet, the single most powerful information source and educational tool ever invented. But many of us use it only to confirm conclusions we didn't arrive at through examining evidence. We go only to sites that agree with our position in order to arm ourselves with snippets that we can use as ammunition against those who disagree with us. The attack on education isn't on training our youth for whatever careers they choose. It's on teaching them to think logically in order to form opinions based on facts rather than on familial and social influences. This part of one's education is about finding out who you are. It's about becoming a happier person. It's about being a responsible citizen. If you end up with all the same opinions you had before, then at least you can be confident that they are good ones because you fairly examined all the options, not because you were too lazy or too scared to question them. End of quotes. Some people think that considering explanations of the origin of the world and life other than what they have understood as correct is to be sliding down a slippery slope. They consider it to be a way of giving in to the other side. If that is true, is a slippery slope worse than being safely grounded in what might be a choice by some of us for closed-minded ignorance? I challenge you to consider the possibility that the various understandings are not opposing of each other, but rather can be in harmony. If you are a believer in God, understand that you can remain anchored deep in God's truth while exploring the origination of the world and life. If it feels like standing on a slippery slope, trust God to believe you, to protect you as you discover more of how amazing He is. If you are not a believer in God, how do you handle the slippery slopes of new viewpoints and facts as you explore our ever-changing world? If you agree it is important to have some grounding, what are you anchored to? That's the end of chapter 4 of this book, and here are just a few thought and discussion questions. Number 1, what has been your approach when faced with a discussion about evolution? Number 2, what adjustments could you make to your approach to be more supportive, especially for those who are influenced by you? And number 3, the Apostle Paul talked with many people who had a variety of views on life. At the same time, he encouraged his fellow believers to stand firm by growing their faith in God. And Paul wrote in Ephesians 4, verse 14, then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced but when people try to trick us with lies so clever they sound like the truth. My question, wherever you stand on the spectrum of understandings of life and the world, how are you grounded? To what are you anchored? If you would like to communicate questions, comments, or prayer needs, you can do that at www.peacewithinreach.com. You can also visit my blog there.
The following are works that were not cited in the audio. Chapter 3, Full Definition of Fossil. Access June 15, 2015 from Merriam-Webster. An overview of the Human Genome Project. Subtitle, What was the Human Genome Project? Access July 10, 2015 from the National Human Genome Research Institute. In Chapter 4, John D. Morris, What is the difference between macroevolution and microevolution? Access September 1, 2015 from the Institute for Creation Research. John Walton, The Lost World of Adam and Eve, YouTube, accessed January 8, 2016. Interview by Kevin Emmert on March 19, 2015 with Dr. John Walton, The Lost World of Adam and Eve, subtitle, Old Testament scholar John Walton affirms a historical Adam, but says there are far more important dimensions to Genesis. Accessed January 8, 2016 from Christianity Today. Interview by Anthony Sacramone on February 25, 2008, titled An Interview with Timothy Keller. Accessed January 8, 2016 from firstthings.com. Firstthings.com.